I'm Jacob Kinberg, and you're listening to Salty Cinema. My guest today is film critic Alyssa Wilkinson. Alyssa has written for numerous publications, including Rolling Stone, Vulture, RogerEbert.com, and The Washington Post. She was formerly critic-at-large for Christianity Today, and is currently a staff writer and critic at Vox.com. She is also an associate professor of English and Humanities at the King's College in New York City. Here's my conversation with Alyssa Wilkinson. We're a few months into 2017. Are there any films so far that you think will make your top 10 by the end of the year?
That's a great question. I think Get Out will. We'll see. I don't know about top 10. I usually do a bit of a longer list.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure Get Out will make it. And then I just saw Lost City of Z.
Okay.
Last week, and I thought it was pretty tremendous. So it's always hard to forecast at this point because I just don't know what it'll be like at the end of the year, but those were both really good.
Yeah. Everyone is kind of across the board crazy about Get Out. Why do you think that film is so good?
It's horror, but it's comedy, which is a good thing. And it's, you know, very extremely well cast and well directed. But I think it's also just such a pleasure to see very confident debut, especially from someone who's not maybe known for directing.
Yeah.
And then also it's so obviously influenced by sort of classics of the horror genre. I mean, you can see so many of them in there, and but it was surprising to realize how few of those had ever dealt with race, in particular.
Yeah.
And also in a way that was innovative. So it's not about sort of your easy targets when it comes to race, but it's about, you know, liberal racism. And that's such a tricky topic to pull together a film about. And it does it so well. I actually just went and saw it again last weekend with my husband who hadn't seen it. It was fun to rewatch, and it's just as good the second time around.
Do you think because so many times there isn't a lot of quality that comes out of the horror genre, that when one kind of is at a different level, it kind of gets even more praise because of that?
It could be. I mean, this isn't really a horror film for horror fans, though.
Yeah, I would say it's more of a psychological thriller.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, it follows all the patterns of a Rosemary's Baby kind of thing, which is definite horror.
Yeah.
But I think that it acts like some other kind of film for so long that you kind of lulled into thinking you're watching something else.
Right.
And then bang.
So
I really appreciated that. And also it was just such a delight to see someone who's known for one kind of filmmaking one kind of performance.
Yeah.
Just pull together something completely different with just perfect confidence.
Yeah, I wonder why he didn't cast himself in the role of the friend who's back home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he wanted to direct.
Yeah.
So it's a good reason. And also, he's such a familiar face that even though he obviously plays all these different characters on Key and Peele, there's still a set of associations that come along with him. And there's also the fact that, Jordan Peele is married to Chelsea Peretti, who's white. And so people who watch the film might find that distracting, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because those are the things that people tend to think about, even though it shouldn't necessarily be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, keeping himself out of it was a really good choice, I think, in the end. It just makes it clear that this is a film, not a vanity project or something like that.
Yeah, it also is always walking that line of, you're kind of expecting it to have humor, and it does because it's coming from Jordan, but you didn't want it to be too far with that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. So I was pleased to see it. Everyone in the theater was thrilled.
So are you, are you in general a fan of the horror genre?
I was pleased. Well, I hadn't watched horror films a lot until probably, the last few years. And, I was delighted to see how much good, I think I had this idea that horror films were mostly, brutal, violent,
mm-hmm.
Sort of titillating gore fests. And then to really discover that actually the history of horror is something totally different was really exciting. Mm. So I enjoy watching good horror. I think that it's hard to talk about a thing called the horror genre because they're all so different.
Yeah.
And I think they're even more diverse than anything you might call like a romantic comedy or something like that. Mm. Horror is much more diverse. So there are kinds of horror that I will always be interested in seeing, and then there are some that I'll never be interested in seeing. I'm never going to go see like a torture subgenre because I just don't think that's any good in general. But
that was my next question. Are there movies that you get assigned or things that you just won't see or won't review?
Oh no. I mean, it's my job to review whatever is coming out, so that's what I do.
Yeah.
But in general, there are so many films that I generally pick what we're going to review, and I don't, if it's a small film or if it's just sort of a film that we know is going to be, there's not going to be much to say about it, then it usually will get skipped in favor of something that has more substance to it, or that's just going to be a big, huge blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
So I like horror, but I don't really get to have preferences so far as what I write about.
Right.
It's like journalists don't really get to pick what they're going to write about. They just have to go with what is there. So I will watch anything in pretty much any genre and try to say something about it as much as I can. At the same time, I have colleagues now at Vox who are much better at writing about certain kinds of films than I am because they're more familiar with the history.
Right.
So like when it comes down to superhero type stuff, I can do it, but sometimes you'll get a better result from giving it to someone who's really kind of been into that their whole lives or has a lot of thoughts about it. Whereas I'm usually just a little bit bored.
Gotcha.
when I watch them. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, as far as genre films go, I really like genres that, have been trying to say something in what they're doing, like sci-fi traditionally, or sometimes fantasy, and certainly horror when it's trying to make a statement, or kind of resituate the way people think about an issue. I love that kind of thing. Mm. I'm always happy when I've watched it.
Yeah.
And they're fun to write about as well.
So for the year, you have a certain amount of films just because of manpower and time that you can review. What is that number like?
It changes depending on the week. I mean, by the end of last year, the last couple weeks of December, I was reviewing like 8 or 10 a week because there just wasn't really another option.
Yeah.
And everyone slammed. At the same time, that's not normal. So I think last week, 6 movies, like 6 fairly large or notable releases came out, and we just basically picked 3 to review that seemed like the ones with the most useful things to say.
Hmm.
So, and then of course there's somewhere I've seen it at, I go to festivals partly just not so much to review films, but to see them and think about, broader commentary or analysis, which is really what I enjoy writing more. I don't know many people who love writing reviews anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty perfunctory and most reviews I think aren't that interesting. So so I see many more films than I write a review of, but I also write about films and without writing a review of those films.
So is that that feeling about criticism, is that the nature of what the people who read criticism, like, is that a market problem? Like, our audience problem, or is it the film criticism community deciding this is how we're going to write reviews and this is what they're going to be like?
I think criticism is much more broad than reviews. I think that most people, especially audiences, think of reviews as like a consumer reports thing.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if you're writing at a short length, there's a very limited number of things you can say about a film at a short length. And so I think that contributes to it. But I think that criticism itself is, you know, I don't even think a lot of films really count as criticism. Mm. Most reviews. I think a lot of them, yeah, they're just very basic sort of summaries and brief analysis. But I think that, you know, like good criticism should take it further than that. And you can do that in a review, but it's often hard because of people wanting you to tell them whether or not they should go see it rather than wanting to engage with what you're saying and then figure out for themselves if they want to see it or not. So that's my experience. Obviously, there are people who write mainly reviews who also are doing good critical work in those reviews. Mm-hmm. But I don't see those things as, I don't think that just because you're reviewing a film that you're doing good critical work. And certainly a lot of reviews just don't have that element at all.
Yeah, I was asked to write a review randomly last year for Midnight Special.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest pet peeve in reading reviews, and I don't really read them as much as I used to, is when they basically just kind of summarize the plot and that's the review.
Right.
And that drives me crazy. And so, but as I was trying to write that review myself, I was like, oh, I kind of get why they have to do that, because you don't have a point of reference to talk about certain things.
Right.
Unless you know what you're talking about, you know?
Right. Well, and that's changing. I mean, we find that I think half of our traffic on reviews comes after the film was released.
That's how it should
Monday.
Be. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it, you know, that means that I can talk about things maybe that wouldn't make as much, but there's an art to figuring out how little you can say about the plot, and still say things about it analytically. And I've seen that change over the past 10 years or so, because I'm, you know, most people are writing for the internet, even if they write for print. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely changes the way that we write about films, but I think for the better. I think it's, you know, whatever you're reading after the film is going to be just much better than whatever you're reading before you see the film.
Mm. So what do you think are the marks of bad film criticism?
Yeah, it's a tough one. The biggest one is usually just bad writing. There's a lot of bad writing out there, you know, cliches and badly constructed sentences. There's quite a bit of it out there, I think. And I don't think that most people I know who want to be film critics aren't thinking about writing first. But, you know, the first thing you are is a writer. And then after that, you're a critic. So that's the first thing that people have to think about and study and really work on. And the best critics have always been like masterful prose stylists. And that's a hard thing to be. So bad writing is the first thing. And then also, I think we see a lot of bad thinking in bad criticism. So often, you know, maybe it's just the most simplistic opinion or the least sort of most obvious thing. Or just sort of the statement that something is problematic without just being used as sort of a end-all. I don't think we have to think about why it's problematic and how it's problematic and what that means. And those are big questions. I think that, having come from the world of Christian film criticism, the worst version of that is just sort of take statements of lists of content issues to be criticism, which not at all. It's
right.
You know, it's just a laundry list. That's problematic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that, the criticism that I'm just not that interested in reading is stuff that doesn't, it makes pronouncements, but it doesn't explain them, like, you know, that this is bad, but then doesn't explain how it's bad. Or I think the classic example of this is someone who says the movie was too slow. Well, there's no such thing as a movie being too slow. There's ways in which movies feel slow. Mm-hmm. But why is it too slow? You know, is it just that you don't prefer it? Is it that you got bored? Or is it that the movie should have been quicker paced in order to match its storytelling? And it doesn't do that well, or whatever that looks like. So I see that kind of criticism, and I just think it's people giving their opinions without actually sitting down and doing the work of criticism. Mm. And I don't want to read that, and so I just don't read those people. You know, and there can be value to it insofar as someone who always agrees with this person's aesthetic preferences might read it as a shorthand to form an opinion, but I don't think that that's a very... I don't think that's really criticism. It's just pronouncements.
What do you think about... Oftentimes, a movie can be critiqued for the ideas and not for the quality of the filmmaking, and they'll just be against... Is that part of criticism, or is that something that should be kept out? Like, your opinion of what the filmmaker is trying to say, you might disagree, but you could still think that the film is good, right?
Right. I think that that's definitely a thing that people can do. I think that, you know, obviously the content and the form of the film need to come in for equal criticism. And I'm very much in favor of saying this is a dumb idea. In fact, I think I did that recently in a review of a film. Oh, it was for, I think it was for Ghost in the Shell. Okay. That just didn't, it had one idea, and then the idea itself was bad. And it was also not a good movie, but there were a whole bunch of pieces going together there. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, what good are we if we're not saying, like, and also this idea is like a bad idea, but then we can't just say it's bad. We have to defend why or how it's bad, how it's a non-rigorous way of thinking. But we can't just pick one or the other. Although at times I think some movies are just unremarkable as films. They're neither good nor bad as filmmaking, but maybe they have terrible ideas in them. I think that, for instance, a lot of the faith-based stuff that's coming out right now is like fairly competent as a film, but just not like they're not good ideas. And that should be pointed out to be that. But at the same time, I don't think we can just say, I didn't like this film's position on something, and thus it's a bad film. Those don't, one doesn't logically follow from the other. It could be a good film with bad ideas. But that requires, again, if we say if you make a value judgment of something as a critic, you have to be able to argue for why you believe that position to be true, and not just state that it is.
I'm sure when you sit down to any movie, you're wanting to watch a good movie. You don't want it to be bad. But do you have any, or do you get enjoyment from really disliking a movie and then getting to write about it? Or is it more fun to write about a movie that you liked?
It's always more fun to write about a movie that you liked. I know there are people who like writing pan films, but I just think it's really awful to... It's just not, there's no pleasure in it.
What about reading those reviews? Because I do get pleasure from that. I don't know why.
I don't, unless it's like a, I don't know. So I think that a lot of people who really enjoy writing reviews of bad movies are getting a lot of enjoyment out of hearing the sound of their own voice. Yeah. And I just don't like reading that kind of thing. I think that I have read a handful that were really smart and thoughtful and capable, that came from more of a position of, man, this was a misfire, but here's the opportunity, rather than, oh my gosh, this is so horrible, and so let's just tear it to shreds. I rarely enjoy that. But I don't enjoy writing them at all. And of course I have to. Sometimes because you just see a film and it's just, but then you, again, like sometimes sitting around and trying to think of why it was bad, but why is it bad? That's hard work. And it's hard to articulate it carefully. Yeah. And also with good style, which again is to me the missing piece for a lot of people. So I would always rather see a film that I think is good or a film that I think is not good but interesting in its failure. You know, it was going for something. That's a lot of, you know, a lot of festival films kind of fall into that category, and that's to me really enjoyable to write about.
I think with a lot of the negative reviews, it's to me, especially with just, you know, probably not any of the top critics, but people on the next level down, like not really understanding how difficult it is to make any movie. And the fact that that a movie works at all is a miracle, you know?
Right.
So it's like, they don't, people don't always understand that and just kind of take it as something that exists and I can just, you know, destroy it. And people didn't spend years making it, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, and my first responsibility is to the reader and the potential ticket buyer and not to the filmmaker always. But I have to remember, like, okay, well, this movie had a budget of, you know, $1 million, which is very low. And it succeeds in some aspects. Here are the aspects it succeeds in. That's more interesting for, to me, to read.
Yeah.
Than, oh man, this is so bad. On the other hand, I have a lot less mercy towards big studio productions because I don't think there's, I think they're, well, these days they seem to be terrible. I don't really know why. And there's just no excuse because they're just trying to take people's money.
Right.
And I'm not sure that I am on board with that.
What you said about being able to articulate and figure out why something doesn't work, I think that is a difficult thing. It made me think of being in film school and seeing like student films, and you just know there's something off or something that is not, when you see a student film and you see a professional film, and it wasn't always clear, like, oh, that looks like it's good cinematography. Why is this not working? Or why is this bad? Like, it's not always so clear.
Right. Or what is it that it's missing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there, you know, I'm not a filmmaker, so I'm not going to be able to come at it from that perspective, or from a technical perspective, but I know when a story isn't working and I can say why, or I can say that something is distracting or, you know, it's sort of not well thought out, or it was rushed for some reason, or, so I can see things I don't like and still think that they're good from that perspective.
Let's go back to your childhood. What?
Okay.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in outside of Albany, New York.
Okay.
So about 3 hours north of the city.
And were movies a love back then? Were you into other things?
No. I was in a very conservative family. I didn't really watch movies growing up at all. That was just not part of our lives. So I think I saw, you know, like a dozen movies total growing up.
Oh, wow. What were you into back then?
You know, I read a lot. We didn't really watch TV, but we read a lot of books, and I played musical instruments. So a lot of my time was spent with that, just learning to do that, piano and things like that. So it was very far cry from movie making in any way.
So what brought you to film criticism?
Yeah, after college, I moved to New York City for a job on Wall Street as a business analyst. I had a degree in technology, and I started dating my husband now, and he went to film school and was working in the industry. And so we would just go to a lot of movies together. And I kind of got to know them and felt like I had a interest in how they worked or didn't work. and also just got to see things that I sort of didn't really know existed. Like, you know, the way I can distinctly remember watching, I think it was Michael Haneke's film Caché, and being bowled over by a film that every time I saw, I knew what was going to happen next. It didn't. And not just plot wise, but like pure cinematic choices. And so, that got me interested. And then I sort of just fell backwards into freelancing. It's, you know, there's no like big secret to getting into criticism. You kind of just pitch stuff to an editor and wait for them to grab it. And, so I wound up at Paste doing that, just freelancing, and freelanced for 10 years for pretty much everyone who would pay me, until I went on staff with Vox last year. So it's been sort of a side thing, or like, you know, half my job at the most, for a very long time. And then I just sort of ended up at Vox. They had been reading my work and wanted a film critic, and that's how I ended up there. So yeah, it was winding, and I've done many things in the meantime that have nothing to do with film criticism. I'm not even sure how many people can have careers as critics alone anymore, but it sort of worked out after many years for me.
What are those other things that you've done through the years?
I worked on Wall Street for a couple of years, and then I wanted to go to graduate school. And so I worked as a tech writer at NYU, where I got my first master's, in their IT department. And then I worked at an arts nonprofit in the city. I edited a public policy journal. I was an editor on for a while. Then I started teaching, and that's what I do full time. That's what I've been doing full time for the last 8 years, at the King's College here in the city. And I've been a professor there for 8 years. And in the meantime, I've done a ton of freelancing, and editorial work. I had sort of a small contract position at Christianity Today for a few years as well. Which was a little more permanent than freelance, but it wasn't like a full-time job or anything like that. So, I've kind of done all those things, and I had to go to graduate school again in the meantime to keep teaching on the college level. So I got an MFA. It's been busy. I've never had just one job before.
And what are you teaching at King's College?
I teach criticism. I also teach postmodern theory and cultural anthropology.
Okay.
Sort of on a basic level. That's a sophomore course. So I teach upperclassmen. But when I started there, I was teaching, you know, like most people, I was teaching English composition courses to freshmen. So
what do you think qualifies someone to be a film critic?
I don't know. That's like saying what qualifies someone to be a writer.
Yeah.
Which is just like basically that you write. And it's pretty much the same. Like if you write criticism about films, then you're a film critic. I don't know. People email me all the time and say, oh, should I get a master's degree in film? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never done that before. So I wouldn't do it. At the same time, I have friends who are critics at major New York publications who have master's degrees in film or bachelor's degrees in film. I have friends who thought they were going to be filmmakers and then wound up being critics.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who have degrees in literature, which I think is a really good way to kind of prepare for wanting to write about film, because you learn to close read things, which is really what you need to be able to do. And I have friends who have no academic background whatsoever in anything related to the humanities, but just had a knack for it and started doing it. So, you know, the only thing that you have to be able to do is, you know, write and hit deadlines and have the gumption to email editors and with your ideas and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it works eventually.
Did you, as you were getting into this, did you have critics that were favorites of yours, or do you have any today, people you really enjoy reading?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are friends of mine now, which is funny because I, you know, have been reading them since I started out. You know, and now it's like strange to say that because they are friends. But, you know, I was always reading the critics at the time, so Manuel Dargis and A.O. Scott. And I had been reading Matt Zollersites for a long time, who is at RogerEbert.com now. And then like past critics or, you know, recently past critics, like obviously everyone who works in film criticism owes something to Roger Ebert himself. And the legacy he left behind is really important for emerging critics right now. You know, I've written for his site. There's a lot of his wife kind of carries on his work that way. And that's been really valuable. But a lot of I probably read fewer film critics than I've read essayists, and narrative journalists and sort of people who work, in related fields, but maybe not that exact field. And I think that's been really valuable. So I did start reading The New Yorker pretty, intentionally right after college. And that probably forms my sensibility as a writer as much as anything. I really love, you know, Janet Malcolm and Joe Nakachella and these different writers who write there, and the critics that they've had, and reading reviews of, you know, reviews of books like the New York Review of Books or Books and Culture before it folded. Those kinds of things have always been really helpful for me to figure out how I wanted to write and what I was interested in writing. So I don't always get to write those kinds of long form, more like carefully put together pieces, but I think that's useful for me in thinking about what makes for an interesting piece of writing rather than a perfunctory piece of writing.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how a lot of times I really enjoy reading authors who have, you know, don't have really anything to do with the film industry, but when they write an essay or something and end up talking about a particular movie, their thoughts on movies are really interesting, and they're great writers, so the way they talk about it is interesting.
Yeah.
And that's some of the best stuff to read about people just talking about movies that they've seen, even if they aren't critics, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think cultural critics, you know, are basically just people who write essays about culture, and that sort of thing is always just wonderful to read. And, you know, and so there's the old standbys that everyone reads, but I think also, you know, if a critic is going to be a good one, they can't just read film criticism, or they get kind of locked into this very specialized way of thinking and talking about culture. And that's fine, but there are very few publications that are for cinephiles anymore. And so people actually want to write criticism on a broader scale, I think, need to be able to crack out of that and have things to say that aren't just about movies.
So when you teach in your class, how do you teach someone to have a point of view?
I mean, I don't. I presume they have one. And so the class that I teach is taught like a creative writing workshop more than anything else. So we're focusing on craft. You know, everyone has a point of view because we're all individual people. So I'm more interested in, okay, well, how are you going to articulate your point of view? And, you know, where are you going to find connections?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Having a point of view in your writing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's actually harder to not have a point of view. I just think that a lot of people have this perspective that there's some correct opinion to have about a film. And that's not true. So the best thing I can do is help students understand that, you know, your reaction to a film is as legitimate as anyone else's reaction to the film. There's not like a correct way to react to a film. But if you want to be a critic, then what you need to do is figure out how to talk about that in a way that will be, you know, readable and interesting to someone even who disagrees with you, and will add something to the broader conversation. And that's tricky. It requires having a broad base in lots of different fields. And I'm somewhat lucky in that we don't have a film major, so I'm not teaching kids who are narrowly focused on that. All our majors are pretty interdisciplinary. So they have backgrounds in art history and philosophy and, you know, all of these things that make for an interesting writer,
yeah.
Literature, stuff like that. But, you know, my job is just to help them figure out, okay, well, what are the challenges of writing about different forms of art? And then how are we going to do that? So we cover film history, but we also cover TV or film reviews, but we also cover how to write about TV, how to write about visual art, how to write about books, all those different kinds of forms, and then how to write sort of broader trend pieces or cultural analysis pieces. Hmm. It's pretty exciting. It's fun. And I've had some really great writers. Hmm. So it's good.
So you said, you grew up not being allowed to watch films and TV. Do you, and you're, but you are still a Christian.
Yes.
And, you have, so I'm assuming you have different views on this now than your parents did. What can you talk about those distinctions?
Yeah. I mean, my parents didn't really have a very formed opinion on this. I just don't come from a family, like even, you know, my parts of my family that are less conservative, they aren't big like readers or moviegoers or anything like that. I have one aunt on each side who's very deeply involved with arts, but they're both kind of, you know, confusing to the rest of the family. So you know, I don't think my parents had thought through it so much as they just sort of thought this wasn't the most important thing. And, you know, probably at the end of the day, learning to read well was more useful, even though I feel like I'm perpetually behind when it comes to actually knowing things about films. But, you know, there are ways to fix that.
Yeah.
Or there are ways to fake it when you need to by reading other more qualified people. You know, there are lots of things that I watch that I wouldn't even recommend my parents to watch because I just don't think they'd enjoy them or there wouldn't be any added value to that. But you know, I it's not like I choose everything I watch because I want to watch it. When I'm actually choosing things to watch for myself, I have like a pretty, I have reasons that I choose to watch things. They're not, I wouldn't call them like standards in the way that we used to talk about it in church, where you like couldn't watch anything with swear words in it or like, you know, but I also think that, you know, it is true that everything that we used to point out as objectionable content, quote unquote, can actually be used that way. But I don't think that that should necessarily, it would be ludicrous for me to suggest that those are all necessarily bad all the time, because obviously they aren't. And I think that, you know, my job and what I'm good at is figuring out how to talk about all of those things and be able to say that sometimes this is exploitative or this is, you know, this is basically here just to sell tickets or something like that instead of having a storytelling capacity. So it's not so much change as just being, I think, maturing and understanding the world more with more complexity, perhaps then. And understanding that art is important. It's just very important. And I don't think its importance was always emphasized in the circles I grew up in, what it's there for, what it does, what its function is. You know, it was usually just seen as kind of a vehicle for carrying messages instead of being something that has in its own right a reason and a purpose to exist in human cultures.
What do you think is different about being a film critic who is a Christian? Does it affect the job in any way for you?
You know, I don't think it affects the job any more than it would if I were a, you know, a lawyer or whatever. But I think that what it does mean is that I have a perspective that's colored by my particular commitments, and then also my even more importantly, the things that I know because of where I came from and who I am. So it's made it much easier for me to pick up on certain kinds of themes and motifs that might be in a film and find ways to talk about them that are interesting, maybe than someone who was not as steeped in, you know, religion and theology and understanding those things. So it's made it easy for me to you know, be able to write about religion and stuff. I'm not offended when people have a perspective about other Christians that seems, you know, maybe less than glowing or something like that. It doesn't offend me at all. Mm-hmm. Because I know personally for that to be true, having you know, been around Christians my whole life. Mm-hmm. But I also have I can talk about what I see in a TV show or in a film in a way that other people might not pick up on as much. And so that's my particular perspective. Mm. Just like I think someone who grew up in a Latina culture has a different perspective on race in a film, I also have a different perspective on religion in a film.
Right. Was there anything different about being a film critic for Christianity Today as opposed to Vox now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, most of it is in the audience. When you're writing, you always have to think of your audience and what they are hearing and what they need to be hearing and what they'll find useful and interesting and challenging. So CT, you know, audience was Christians generally, though not always. And they were often looking for how the film fit into their lives or, you know, those kinds of things. And so I was always working really hard to try and show the importance of film. And what I was doing there and show that, you know, these things really do affect us whether or not we even watch them. And so that's something that we need to be thinking about. So I wrote mostly about stuff that had connections to things that Christians care about broadly and historically or personally and today. And then moving over to Vox, I'm writing for a mainstream general audience. I don't know their faith commitment. I don't know their political commitment. I don't know any of those things. And so I'm trying to write something broadly interesting to the general reader who's generally interested in many different topics. So what that's shifted is I don't have to point my finger at every piece of quote unquote objectionable content, because nobody's going to send me an angry email for not telling them about something that's already right there in the MPAA rating, which is the kind of email I used to get all the time at CT. I also have a broader set of topics that I'm thinking about when I go in, which is good because I have more expertise or at least more interest in things that aren't strictly theological or you know, pertaining to Christians or something like that. But it also means that when I write about religion and film, which I've done a bunch of times since I got there, I shift my language because I'm talking to maybe lots of people who aren't Christians or who are of a different faith or no faith at all. And I want them to sort of see the broader pattern in the culture that I'm writing about.
If because of your Christian convictions you disagreed with some cultural thing that is a prominent belief in culture that you disagree with but is evident in a film, if you're writing for Vox, would you shy away from talking about that in a review, or do you have concerns of what you can and can't express about what you believe within your reviews?
Oh, I mean, I don't know that my job is to evaluate beliefs of people in my job. I don't think it ever has been. I do think that if there was like a clear reason, like nobody cares what I think about some topics that maybe are like my personal beliefs about it. What they care about is what the movie believes about it.
Right.
And if I can line that up with historical Christianity, for instance. So like if someone gets something sort of boneheadedly wrong about Christian belief, then I can say like, this is actually not orthodox. And then I can back that up. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's good. And so there'd be no problem in saying that. And in fact, Vox's whole brand is based around providing context and expert commentary to things that we see in the headlines. So, you know, in truth, I don't really run across a lot of, there's just not a lot in pop culture that is blatantly, proclaiming things about religion. Usually it's more tapping into motifs and metaphors and, sensibilities from religion. So, The Leftovers is a good example in that it's a show about religion. There's no way around it. But it's not based in reality. It's based in something else.
I guess I'm not referring to people commenting on religious beliefs, but just about reality and truth in general,
mm-hmm.
and the truths of our culture or what they say is true. For instance, like follow your dreams,
right?
Like everything is about look inside, like
right.
things like that, where you would as a Christian know that no, that's not, I don't believe that that's the way you should live your life, like, or
yeah,
that's not where you're gonna find satisfaction, like
right.
We were talking about before about how you, if there's a boneheaded idea in a movie, you might, as a part of your criticism, talk about that being a bad idea, you know?
Right. But I don't think that's a bad idea because I'm a Christian. Like, I think it's a bad idea because I know it's a bad idea. Like, you know, it's my Christian faith that has helped me arrive at that conclusion.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't make it more real for me and then less real for someone else. So like Ghost in the Shell was another good example because that movie has a really stupid idea about how people are formed. Like it basically sets two ideas against each other. One is that we're formed by our memories and our history, and the other is that we're only formed by our actions. And I was like, okay, well, first of all, as a Christian, and I don't have to write this in the piece, but as a Christian, I believe that's untrue. I believe that it is our history and our memories, that we're not just like sort of static blank slates.
Yeah.
Christians aren't the only people to ever believe that, though. And so,
right.
You know, I think I actually just said this is a stupid idea and explained why it's a stupid idea.
Right. Yeah. So you don't have to invoke your Christianity to explain why things are not true. Objectively.
Well, right. And that would be false because, you know, then it implies that only Christians believe this way anyhow, which would not be true, obviously. You know, and so the places where my specific experience as a Christian would matter, I think, is mainly when something is speaking directly to Christianity. Otherwise, it's like me believing this to be true for everyone, not just for Christians, and thus, you know, then we could talk about it. So I'm deeply informed by that perspective, but in many ways it winds up looking like the same perspective that a lot of, I have friends who are Christians, who are film critics at major papers, who kind of work under the same perception. And then I have friends who I have friends who are definitely not Christian, who are film critics, who people have asked me repeatedly if they are, because to them it sounds like a Christian perspective when it's really just sort of a right perspective, which is what so much of Christianity is about.
Hmm. Are you aware of any Christian female directors?
Directors?
Yeah, as I'm doing this podcast, I am, you know, I was really glad I got to talk to you, and I would like to try and talk to more women. And I personally didn't know of any, and I was wondering if you were aware of any.
I don't really. I don't even know a lot of Christians who direct films in the mainstream. Like, I know a lot of people who I think make films that are really interesting and religiously searching, but they generally are not, that, you know, they wouldn't call themselves Christian.
Mm.
So that number is even low. If we're not talking about gender,
right?
There are just so few females who direct, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I haven't had great. I'm sure there are. I just haven't had great, ability to track them down. And also, film people tend not to talk about their religion much if they can help it.
Why do you think that is?
I think that they're, you know, I wouldn't find it to be relevant for most of the kind of conversations that filmmakers have about their film. You know, it's usually when you're talking with a journalist or something about your film, you're not talking about your religion. And when you do, it's frequently much more complicated. So it's a pretty small number. I mean, even if you look at filmmakers who many people consider to be making sort of Christian-ish movies like Terrence Malick, his actual perspective on the world is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I think it's just, when it's relevant, it comes up, but it's not maybe their first concern.
So you mentioned there are a lot of critics who themselves came out of filmmaking or who go into filmmaking afterwards. Do you have any interest in making films at any point?
No. I watched my husband work in the industry for about 8 years, and I can't imagine. I also just possess a completely different skill set from that. And I can't imagine doing it. I do have a few friends who do it, but it seems like you have to have a great deal of persistence and interest in the mechanics of filmmaking to actually do one. Mm. I can't even imagine. I don't write fiction, so I can't even imagine writing a script. I do some writing and thinking about nonfiction films sometimes, which seems to fall outside of what most people think of. Documentary, but like more experimental documentary. Mm-hmm. I could imagine working with someone on something like that, but I would never want to be head of a project.
What do you think about what do you think about the aggregate score websites like Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes? Do you think that's good for film criticism?
Not for criticism. I think that it's good for people who want to have a sense of whether they should go to a movie or not. And it might sometimes get eyes pointed at reviews that might not be seen otherwise, but I guess I think I'm listed on Rotten Tomatoes, but I don't really look at it very much. I think it's much more reliable to find a critic whose sensibility matches your own and then just read that person. rather than Rotten Tomatoes, which often, the problem is, of course, that when you write a review, sometimes it's not a fresh or rotten, that's not how reviews work. Like, they have shades of variation between those things. And so it's totally up to the site's discretion how they assign your review. So I've seen reviews of mine that I did not think were positive at all, ascribed to, with a fresh rating or vice versa.
Oh, so who does that? They just read your review and then decide whether they thought it was fresh or not?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, no, it's not like I don't upload my own reviews or anything like that. So there's staff who do it. I think there are some people who do that, but I have never gotten into that game. Huh. And, I think Metacritic is a little better. They're better at curating who's included. And they have kind of a number score rather than like just fresh or rot. I mean, I know Rotten Tomatoes does, but they're useful insofar as they go. I see why people want them. I just don't look at them very much.
Hmm. Do you read any other critics, or does that kind of creep into your writing and so you try to stay away from reading other people's reviews?
I usually don't read them before I write a review if I'm reviewing it. And there are some people who I read relatively consistently, or if I am kind of messed up when I write about the movie and I kind of get to the end and I have a review, but I kind of want to hear what other people thought.
Yeah.
Also, some critics are just really good at writing about particular things, and those are people I will seek out when I'm thinking about a particular movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If I were to read a review before I were to write my own, it would be very difficult for me to feel like I wrote my own. Their turns of phrase creep in and the way they state things, and it sort of messes with your mind. But that, I think reading reviews of other films is really good for style. But I think it's the Coen brothers who said that when they're making a movie, they don't watch any other movies at all while they're making the movie. And I can see the value in that. It might not be so helpful if you're not a stylistically interesting filmmaker like they are. But
Do you think criticism will ever go away? Will it always be something that we need as a culture and are looking at?
I mean, I, there's no way that criticism as a thing will go away. There's a decent chance that professional criticism will not be sustainable over the long run. That's totally up to the consumers. And if people just decide they don't want to read it, then nobody will pay us to write it. So, and that's really sad. I don't think it'll die off completely. I think there will always be some professional critics, but I worry about who will be left and what kind of diversity of opinions will be out there. But people have the impulse to do criticism. Everyone's a critic, literally, and not in a bad way, but like everyone sees a movie and then wants to think about it or write about it or talk about it or at least, you know, tweet about it. And so that will always be there. And then, you know, I don't know if you've read A.O. Scott's book on criticism, but his whole point is that every work of art in and of itself is implicitly a work of criticism, because it's always building on and modifying and commenting upon what came before it. So I think that that is a, you know, that's a compelling argument to me for the sustainability of criticism. But the sustainability of like daily newspaper criticism or monthly magazine criticism is more of an open question, I think. But, you know, a lot of TV criticism has actually expanded over time. And so that, you know, that might mean good things for film criticism as well. And I also think that as many people have told me and I've seen myself, the more versatile a critic is, the better off they're going to be in the long run. Being able to write about all kinds of things, being able to interview and write features and do reporting, all that stuff. If a critic can pull all those pieces together, then they become a much more marketable force and more hireable, really, at the end of the day.
As unuseful as the faith-based term is for describing movies, within that sort, that genre, if you want to call it that, what do you think have been some of the best films to come out of that?
Out of the faith-based genre?
Yeah.
I watched the number that I need to for my job.
Yeah.
And, which means that a lot of them have been pretty bad. Although, you know, at the same time, there was some stuff back in like the 70s that the Billy Graham Association used to do that was pretty good. And I think that would qualify, or at least it was interesting. You know, it, obviously in the 70s, there was a lot going on in the film world. And so I think you may have had people making films that were like, I'm thinking of The Hiding Place, for instance. And, you know, some of those old apocalyptic movies like A Thief in the Night, they might not be great cinema, but they have cult following, which means they had some kind of stick. But I think that, unfortunately, largely what I've seen has been pretty bland, kind of calculated to either, like, flatter the audience or to, you know, kind of reinforce their beliefs or to just sell a lot of tickets to people by being really, really vague about faith, which doesn't strike me as very good filmmaking ever in any capacity, no matter what the who's making it.
Yeah.
Or it's just not been really well made. And this is going to sound really strange, but I think that you can see like queer film, which has a similar kind of always had like a very targeted market and had like a very specific set of concerns.
Yeah.
On like a 10-year path ahead of faith-based film. So I think if there's like enough interest and sort of money and continuing growing filmmaking capacity in faith-based film, that you might see what happened with queer film, where it kind of got mainstreamed and there's like better directors or just sort of like more experienced people making film. You might see something like that happen in the faith-based film industry, and that would be great because I would love to see some of that stuff. But for now, you know, the films that I think of as being actual faith-based or religious films are almost always, even the ones that are explicitly concerned with faith, are almost always made by agnostics who are just interested in the topic. So I don't think under the
strictures of what people count as faith-based that they would count into that. But they're great ones. I mean, I think of like The Innocents from last year, which is about nuns in World War II, or Calvary from a few years ago, or Silence from just last year. There's any number of really good films specifically about faith and doubt that, you know, kind of flew under the radar for church people, but are definitely much, you know, head and shoulders above often a lot of films in their own genre, even that aren't sort of faith-based.
Have you seen The Case for Christ yet?
I'm
looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, and it's currently fresh, which no faith-based movies are ever fresh. So I wonder, there's no consensus yet, but.
Yeah, I heard people say they liked it. I'm not really interested, honestly, so I'm probably not going to get around to it. Faith-based film is so not part of my particular field of interest that I only kind of, I'm like forced into talking about it, but I think it's just, I don't like niche film most of the time anyhow. So I would much rather leave it to people who are interested in it, which they exist, you know.
Yeah.
But they're just not me so much.
Yeah. I am not interested in it either. It's like the same with, I don't really listen to very much Christian music. However, because I'm a Christian and I want to see, like, I think the whole point for me of this podcast is trying to find those Christian voices who are making quality things and talk to them about, you know, what they do. And, I want to see that. I mean, forget about the genre of faith-based. I want to see Christians making good things, you know, whoever the audience is for it, you know.
Right, which is happening. And, you know, and there are a lot of Christians kind of floating around in criticism, too. It's hard because it's not, it's almost definitionally problematic to make a faith-based film since the genre is determined by marketing category rather than by content. And so, you know, really what they mean is either like what Flannery O'Connor would have called sentimental crap, usually, or it's like political film, which is, you know, going to be more of it, I think, in the future. So it's tricky,
man.
I did hear good things about Case for Christ. I just don't understand who the market is, or I do know who the market is.
Right.
Yeah.